Hello and welcome to the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where we've got 99 episodes and this is one. I'm Tom.
I'm Eric.
I'm Brian.
And tonight we'll be talking about some earth-shattering news on the tabletop gaming front, namely the Indiegogo campaign to fund Season 3 of Tabletop, a most popular internet show hosted by Will Wheaton and Felicia Day. But before we convince you that your money would better be spent funding our show, we'll kickstart, pun intended, things with our weekly geekly weekly roundup. Brian, what have you been up to since last we spoke?
I've been a bit under the weather, so I lost like most of my last weekend. About the only thing interesting I have to report is our latest game night, which I finally convinced people to play Great Dalmoody. I've had that game for like 2 years, I think. I never played it. And what was the I never remember the name of it. I always want to call it Smash something. With it was the NES port with Firebrand Dragons. It's called Rampage, right?
Yes, Rampage.
Rampage and Rampage, which is pretty much the same thing as the video game. I love that about it.
Is it in any way tied to the video game, or is it more or less just a play on the same concept, giant monsters destroying cities?
I would say it has to be giant monsters destroying this, cities, eating people, throwing cars by the same name.
Hmm. Bear some investigation.
It may.
That pretty much it?
That's it for me.
Cool. Short and to the point. Eric, what about you, man?
Well, as I made mention on last week's episode, I spent quite a bit of time in Boston at the National Science Teachers Association's conference. And I got to say, it did not disappoint. I had a blast. Absolutely loved my trip. Loved the convention. The show floor was definitely where it was at. Got to see new offerings from LEGO Mindstorms. As many of you have seen me post last week, Cosmos actually presented a line of all sorts of optics, telescopes, microscopes, even binoculars, which was kind of amazing to me. All licensed. And as Jordan, my brother and one of our listeners, pointed out, the box art looks almost exactly like whoever designed the box art for Titanfall, or at least the special edition Xbox One Titanfall. It's shockingly similar.
Really?
Yeah, like it looks like the same product line.
You know, I didn't really notice a resemblance there. That's interesting.
I have to say, though, if one thing stole the show this year, hands down, it was 3D printing.
Really?
3D printing was everywhere. MakerBot had a huge booth set up showing off their entire new line of printers that are all going to be launching later this year, including the MakerBot Mini, which looks like a really awesome leaping off point. If you're interested in it as a hobby, compared to some of the prices of the other ones, this one started at $1,400, and the output was fantastic. It was just a really wonderful product.
That's cool. And in the educational setting, do you guys use 3D printing, or is that still sort of infiltrating education?
It's infiltrating. Now, I'm on an elementary level, and I got to say, I see applications where I could use this product in the classroom, and the ideas are just coming to me to the point where I'm ready to write some grants. I'm just ready to do it.
Awesome, man.
That makes me so happy.
Honestly, most of the conversation that I heard on buses and back in the hotel or even on the show floor was like, how do we get our hands on a 3D printer? Teachers are ready to jump all over this technology, and I'm glad that it's happening. I'm really glad.
I was reading not so long ago that a bunch of really prime patents are about to expire, and that 3D printing is just going to explode in the next, like, within 5 years. It'll probably change the world.
And I hope that it does. You know, I've been looking at a lot of the software, trying to find kind of an access point for my students, especially being on an elementary level. And there's a lot out there. There's a lot of really user-friendly software that already exists for 3D modeling that can easily be applied to 3D printing. So I'm looking forward to using it. As usual, there were a lot of robotics on the floor. That was a lot of fun, more than I could count. And one thing I did take time out of my busy schedule in Boston to go do, of course, was see Captain America. Winter Soldier, absolutely fantastic. If I had to pick a top three Marvel movies that were actually made in-house by Marvel, Avengers is always going to stay number one until they do better. And right now they haven't done better. Avengers is fantastic. But I think Iron Man 1 and this movie, Captain America Winter Soldier, are now tied for second. I liked it that much.
Iron Man 1, you say?
Yes.
I got to agree. I will mention it in my own update, but an excellent movie. Though I was expecting Winter Soldier to be like Iceman and have like winter powers.
Yeah, I definitely didn't expect that. In fact, I was rather shocked by the amount of people who were startlingly surprised that Bucky was the Winter Soldier. And I feel like I'm not ruining anything by saying that, because one, if you're a fan and you haven't seen this 2 weeks after the movie came out, it's your fault. And two, if you're listening to the show, you're probably familiar already. That said, I think the point in the audience where you could really sit there and just go, there are my nerds, there are all of my geeks, nerds, whatever you want to say. By the way, Jordan has been furious with me, and I have to give him a shout out. He wants me to make more of a geek nerd distinction. I think that line has been blurred, so I'm not worrying about it too much. But the geeks were obvious, because as soon as the name Stephen Strange was just uttered, there were four or five just squeeze right throughout the theater, and you could just pinpoint where they were. That was a nice moment.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting with these comic adaptation movies to note the percentage of like hardcore geeks that are in the mix along with the mainstream audiences.
Yeah, and that was my point with the Bucky thing, because I figure either one, you went into this movie knowing the characters well enough that you probably already knew that. No reason to gasp. Or two, you didn't know that, and based on the first movie, I don't think that's that big a shocker. He wasn't that well-established a character in the first movie. So if that's all you know him from, why do you care?
An interesting point, and I will also touch on that.
But that's it for me for this week. I was very happy with my trip, and I'm glad to be home. But I'm ready for the next one.
Well, we're glad to have you back, and I'm really glad to hear that so many cool things are entering the world of education, and I'm really glad that there are Cosmos-branded items. I want to buy some just in principle. I don't know if they're available to the public or only educators, but I really want to support that show, and that's encouraging.
They will be available to the public.
Excellent. Okay, is that it for you, sir?
That's it for me.
Okay, brings it around to me. There's a little bit of overlap. Of course, I have been doing some gaming with Brian. Got to play a variety of games in spite of the fact that I showed up a little late. Game night has been a great success. We alternate between X-Wing and sort of just general Euro and tabletop gaming during our regular weekly gaming night at the Adventure Game Store in nearby Davie, Florida. If you're in our area, feel free to stop by. If you're not, feel free to fly in. We will happily play games with you. I think we had some people from far-flung locales this time, did we not, Brian?
I think Quebec is our record, so that was new.
Cool. So we've got people coming from such exotic lands as Canada to play with us. And had a really good time playing. I think that was my first time playing Dunwoody, actually. And I had a wonderful time with that, in truth. Did that, played a little more Skulls while Rampage was going on at the other end of the table. And got to do a doubleheader of gaming when I went back for Tabletop Day on Saturday. Back to the Adventure Game Store. They were sponsoring an event. Got to pick up a couple of rare Crossmaster characters for that cool tabletop, I guess, turn-based strategy game that you bought me back for Christmas, Brian.
Very nice.
Yeah, one of the guys that we play with, this really cool guy who's down from Boston, had them, and I was like, ooh, can I see him? And he's like, oh, do you play the game? And I said, yeah. And he, oh, here, you can have them. We had a connection that we're both vegan, so he hooked me up with those. So now I have two special promotional figures to go with my collection.
Way to go, Joe.
Yeah, it's Joe. Yeah. Special thanks to Joe. Really cool guy, actually. Definitely one of our better acquisitions on Game Night, I would say, Joe. So played some games and, of course, went and saw Winter Soldier with Eric. And I was kidding. I was not expecting Winter Soldier to be an Iceman-like character with winter powers. I knew better.
And I figured so much.
Yes, you figured right. And I was not expecting there to be really any recognition of Bucky as a character. I was shocked that people were shocked that it was Bucky. There were people all around who, when his mask came off and you saw that it was him, they were like, no, it's him. Which means they must have remembered him from the last movie, but I find that so hard to believe.
Yeah, I felt the same way, and that was exactly my point. I was shocked that people gasped.
Did we just miss a presentation of Bucky earlier in the movie or something? Because I just can't believe people were that tuned in with the story.
I honestly thought that them mentioning his name was like an Easter egg. Like, he was just generic guy, and they're like, call him Bucky. That'll throw people.
Oh, wait, you didn't know that Bucky was, in fact, his pal from back in the day?
No, I mean, I knew, but in the movie, he was just like, someone stepped up, and they're like, hey, it's Bucky. And I thought that was supposed to be like, One of those weird little hidden things that only Uber geeks know?
Right, right, right.
I didn't know he was, like, important whatsoever to the movie.
He is, as it turns out, a person brainwashed by communists.
Yeah, they did a little, like, flashbacky thing, I think, try to kind of clue in the audience, but that should not have set it up that much.
Why do I think that Bucky's real story somehow involves Red Skull? Am I just mistaken there, by the way?
No, no, you're absolutely right. They definitely messed with the story a little bit. The Winter Soldier story was definitely altered. But not to the point where I think it affected the movie at all. I like how they did it.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought that was a really good movie. So I concur with you that it was excellent. I would put it up there in the running with the Avengers. The Avengers has so far been the crown jewel in the Marvel movie. What's the crown jewel, the pinnacle of fortune, horde of movies, whatever we're going to call it. And looking forward to more Marvel movies. I wish DC would follow suit with something as excellent, but we will see what the future holds. Now on to our topic, though. As I mentioned, I was at the Adventure Game Store for Tabletop Day on Saturday. And while there, I was speaking to the proprietor, Brian, who has been on our show in the past. And he was telling me that there is an Indiegogo campaign afoot to raise money for Tabletop Season 3. And as we had the Tabletop show streaming, an ad came up for it where they were basically asking people to contribute to the campaign for Season 3 of the show. And I was puzzled as to why they needed that. And the pieces all finally fell together when Brian told me that they're going away from Google sponsorship, and then our Brian told me that they're going away from Google sponsorship because Google is no longer sponsoring these exclusive channels. I think that was you that told me that, Brian, or was it you, Eric? One of you told me.
It may have been me.
Right. So now it all makes sense. The money that was coming in from Google to fund the show to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm assuming, is going away. So now they need another source of that money to keep the show going because I don't think they advertise or anything, right?
I think they have, like, ads on the site, but they don't take, like, sponsorship. They won't do, like, review our game.
Right. And that's probably good for the integrity of the show. And I should say that one of the things that Brian at the Adventure Game Store mentioned to me was that once they sort of go away from Google and they are producing their own content, it's going to be theirs to do with what they will, meaning they can shop it to different outlets. It could still be on YouTube, but they could put it on different streaming services, offer it, I'm assuming, on consoles and print discs, anything they want. I'm not sure if Google exercises a certain measure of control over the show, if it's their property per that sponsorship agreement, but going forward, any new seasons they produce will be theirs. So it'll be based, I mean, I presume they could even put it on like a network if they wanted on television. And Eric, I think you had a point to make or a question to ask regarding sponsorship and advertising.
Yeah, well, I'm not too sure how Google ran that model. You know, I've watched some programming on there, and I'm not certain how their revenue stream for that worked. So did they have total control over any advertising that went into these shows, or was this something where they kind of tried to appeal to the particular listeners, where they allowed the producer of the particular video to have some say in the advertising?
I think with a small-time operation, Google might, using their metrics gathering, just present an ad that that particular user might respond to, you know, based on everything they know about the person that's watching the show. I'm not sure, though. Are they tied to the show, or are they tied to my YouTube profile as I'm logged in watching? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I only ask because I watch Hulu a lot, and I don't know who they're advertising to. Hulu's advertising is a disaster. I'm not sure who they're marketing to, but they've never even come close. So that's why I was asking.
Getting a lot of MaxiPad ads, are you?
Pretty much.
Brian, what are your thoughts? Do you think that, and we could probably look this up, but do you think that Google tailors ads based on the programming or based on the profile of the user watching the show? And does advertising, is something going to be lost if you go away from such a powerful advertising platform as Google?
Funny you should ask. I have seconds ago experienced their advertising. I just happened to Google this while we were chatting. And the first ad that popped up on Tabletop channel was a robotic Sphero ad, which I happened to have been Googling last night for the write-up. while posting last week's episode. So I suspect it's tailored. I should play the lottery, or it's tailored.
Okay, interesting. So that means that Google, in partial exchange for their sponsorship money and wanting compelling content on their channel, reserve the rights to insert commercials tailored to you. So there's not necessarily a sponsorship by the makers of the maxi pads or the Sphere. What was that? That was the
Sphere. They made the selfie bot. Joe.
Right, the selfie bot. Right. I mean, I'm sure there's some arrangement that they make with Google to shop ads to their particular customers, but Tabletop themselves are not necessarily involved in whatever these arrangements are, we would presume, right?
I have no idea how the original program worked, but if Tabletop were just a YouTube channel, that's exactly how it would work, isn't it? They would get kind of a cut of that?
I would gather.
Yeah, it's either that or I have to stop Googling MaxiPads.
are you doing a lot of MaxiPad shopping? Are you just considerate boyfriend or something, Eric?
Well, I'm nobody's boyfriend at the moment, so which makes that more awkward, I guess.
Interesting. Well, the ad revenue stream notwithstanding, I mean, presumably if one of the networks that this show continued to air on was YouTube, that existing advertising model could stay. And, you know, maybe there could be a new arrangement now that there's no sponsorship coming from Google. Maybe Tabletop and Google could share that revenue in a somewhat different way. But once they've got a polished, nice show that they produce themselves, now they have the opportunity to shop it around. Now, what do you guys think about one of the things I mentioned, which is consoles? Consoles seem like an obvious fit just because this is kind of geeky stuff. I'm assuming there's a lot of crossover between video gaming and tabletop gaming. You guys have thoughts on that?
I would definitely agree, and I know that both the Xbox and PlayStation networks have made their attempts to do original programming as well as kind of influx that programming that they thought would appeal to their players, users, whatever you want to call them. So I don't see why that wouldn't be the case.
I don't know if the crossover is as healthy as you think it is. I would think that both of these audiences are such devoted fans that they might not have a lot of time to devote to the other thing.
So you think that they're, in a lot of cases, they're mutually exclusive just as a function of leisure time?
Yeah.
Ah. Interesting. I'm inclined because, of course, I have my foot in so many hobbies and project my likes and desires onto everyone else to believe that everybody has time for all these hobbies. And that bias is reinforced by my attendance at the PAX convention, which is, of course, devoted to tabletop and video gaming. But it occurs to me that the PAX convention might point to the very lack of leisure time you infer is there, Brian, because while at PAX, I never have time to see all of the board games and video games. So it goes in life. You might be onto something. There might just be so much leisure time to spend. And there might be a certain amount of overlap, but maybe not as much as I think.
Well, I mean, not to use Brian's own words against him, but he did tell us that there was a Rampage tabletop game based on a video game.
Oh, and so we've come full circle. How do you answer that one, Brian?
Well, I think there are generalists for sure. I've never considered myself. Well, at one point I did, but I haven't in about 10 years considered myself hardcore video game or hardcore tabletop. But I can't imagine some of the folks that I know are hardcore video game, you know, spending 3 or 4 nights a week at a local game store playing tabletop. And I can't imagine some people I know play tabletop at a game store 3 or 4 nights a week having time to be any good whatsoever at video games. So crossover for sure. Probably cost effective to advertise to them for sure. But I'm not convinced it's a huge, like, perfect fit crowd.
I think that you might have identified a third tier geek, which is us. I think you and I, and I don't want to speak for you, Eric. I'll let you speak for yourself on this. But Brian and I think, are generalists. We fit into what he has coined the generalist geek category. I tabletop game 1 or 2 nights a week. I video game a couple nights a week. but I split my time. I'm not a hardcore video gamer only. And hanging out with people who are both hardcore gamers in the video game sense and the tabletop sense, I will say that I have even encountered disdain between the groups. In the Adventure Game Store, in fact, I remember some people when we were playing a D&D game saying, "You can't get this in a video game." And among my video game playing pals, I've heard, you know, I don't want to sit down and imagine the action. I want to experience. I want it to have it served up to me with like eye blistering graphics. So it seems like they might be serving this third audience of generalists, as Brian has posited. What do you think about that?
I think there's always a gray area when it comes to geekdom. I'm really trying to find a word that Jordan will approve of, and sooner or later he'll chime in on our fan page and maybe let me know when I'm doing it right or wrong. Because everyone I know, I mean, call them geeks, call them nerds, what have you, whatever it is that they're into, and I think that's the distinction, it branches out so much. They're never into just one thing. For example, I mean, I'm a science nerd through and through. I absolutely am. It's my passion. It's my job. However, everyone else I know in that field has something else that goes with it. They're a diehard movie buff of science fiction movies. They collect something nonsensical. They play video games avidly. There's something else. No one is so dedicated to one thing that they do nothing else. I would say if I fell into any of those camps beyond the science part, it would be the video game aspect. But even I have taken kind of a little hiatus from video games kind of lately. And when it comes to tabletop, I'm a few and far between. I love playing it, but it's never really even a weekly thing for me. When I go, I enjoy it, but I can't imagine spending 3 days a week doing it. So is there some blend? Of course there's some blend. It's just, I think it depends on where your extremes are.
So with that said, you've got Tabletop, a show highlighting tabletop games through streaming media, basically. Maybe a video game console platform makes sense to an extent, but apart from a YouTube channel, what other outlet could there be? I can't think of like a board gaming or tabletop gaming network or a network that caters to that crowd out there if they wanted to shop it to the TV side of the house. Can you?
Well, what I've seen is two things. Netflix really seems to want their programming to be diehard viewer programming. The shows that they've made that are exclusive to Netflix seem like the type of shows, like they're attempting to rival HBO series. That seems like their angle. Hulu, on the other hand, has hundreds of exclusive programs. Now, admittedly, some of those are exclusive to the U.S. They import U.K. programming or they find programming from Korea. But there are several shows, and some of those shows are literally like news-style programming or even what remotely looks like video podcasting-style programming. So I could see a fit for it on Hulu. I don't see a fit for it so much on Netflix.
Interesting, right. So Hulu's more friendly to a topical discussion show, whereas Netflix is kind of going for the produced episodic fictional sort of thing, I guess, or maybe documentaries. I mean, I'm not getting the right words together here, but...
Well, I think part of the issue is scheduling, too, where Netflix dumps all the episodes from new seasons or whatever all at once because they're not interested in scheduling. They don't release things weekly. They don't release things daily. They don't release things monthly. It's all in one big chunk. Whereas Hulu does release things on a daily and even a weekly basis. So I think the reason why Hulu gets these shows and picks them up is because they can do things a little bit more episodically and kind of stay more current, which is why people pay for Hulu, because it's current.
Oh, I see. So if you are more into what they term binge watching shows, Netflix might be better suited because they've got like the whole season of the show you've been meaning to catch up on.
Right, and even when they do their own programming, like the first season of Orange is the New Black, they just dumped every episode on all at once.
I see. Brian, what do you think? So other streaming services besides YouTube, you think a home on Hulu or Netflix? Eric seems to think Hulu's the better choice might work for this show.
Well, I have heard, and I actually can't find anything to
to quote as a source on this, but I have heard that there was actually a network interested in doing a television show with these guys. Like, they would actually bring it, like, half an hour, you know, Sci-Fi or Spike or something like that.
I think Sci-Fi might work. Sci-Fi seems like the natural fit. Interestingly, AMC, like, after The Talking Dead and before Comic Book Man or something, might also be a fit, right? I'm just trying to think of where those eyeballs might be that would respond favorably to this. So I can think of near or around a block of sort of geeky programming on any channel. And those, yeah, Sci-Fi and AMC are the two that come to mind. Although AMC just still, I imagine in my mind being like a thespian's channel. So it's really counterintuitive in a way. I don't know. Any other cable networks besides those come to mind for you guys?
Nothing comes to mind cable network-wise unless maybe like Spike TV picked it up for late night because they tend to kind of latch onto those things, the CES, the E3 broadcasts.
Yes.
So maybe if Spike TV threw it on there on a Sunday afternoon or on a late night, I can kind of see that as a slight possibility.
What about a resurrected circa 2000 G4?
Well, if they could fit it in between the over and over again clips of the same old video games, you know, U.S. Truckers. And...
I'd rather watch those clips of old video games than Cops. I don't want to veer into a discussion of the demise of G4 again because it makes me sad.
It's very depressing.
Yeah. But, I mean, we are kind of trying to find a place on the 400 useless cable channels in our lineup to place a show that we would all actually probably watch and having a hard time. So I think that speaks to the inadequacy of cable television as a outlet for our entertainment.
Well, there is a game show network, so if they can find a way to play these games for money, they're in good shape.
Grandma gets done watching The Price is Right. What are these kids talking about?
Yeah.
I suppose maybe it's time for a new channel. Ooh, the Hobby Network. What do you think of that?
Is there not a Hobby Network?
I don't think so.
It has to exist somewhere. It has to.
I'm
ready to Google this.
The Hobby Network. Wow, we could launch our own network. The Nerd Extravaganza presents the Hobby Network. And now it's not like well, I guess you could have a scrapbooking hour and stuff, but there's definitely an awesome several hour block of programming that caters to us. Brian, what do you think of this idea?
I'm with you guys. It feels like there should be, but I can't think of one.
Oh, man, we might have inadvertently come up with our next going nowhere great idea.
Yeah, in fact, the only one I can find is by an incorporated company called Hobby Television, which really just does like local access TV buying network, like a home shopping network.
Yeah, dumb.
Not cutting it at all.
Let's get our own Indiegogo thing going to start the Hobby Network, and our very first show will be Tabletop.
That'll work. Now, my question is this. I do see a lot of TV shows funding through Kickstarter, funding through Indiegogo, which is relatively new to me. I'll admit I'm not that familiar. For example, that started, and I don't know if you remember this, in 2012, a show called Pioneer One launched, which was a Kickstarter-funded science fiction show, which had a budget of $6,000, and apparently kept on going, totally crowdfunded. I wasn't even aware of it, but a little research has led me to it, and they actually produce all their shows and let them out via BitTorrent. But on top of that, there's something called Mobcaster. Not sure if you're familiar with Mobcaster.
Mobcaster, please describe it.
Basically, what Mobcaster is taking these two concepts and putting them together. It's an online TV network where everything is crowdfunded, and basically your show comes on when it gets funded.
Oh, so we could get on here.
We could.
Let's do it. Let's do the Nerd Extravaganza show. And our funding goal will be like whatever we can come up with. We'll fund it. We'll be on the network.
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you have any idea what their budgets are? I mean, does it say that anywhere? Or?
It seems like it's on a show-to-show basis. For example, I'm looking at just the home screen, and you got shows called like Border Queen, which has a $12,000 budget goal. They've met their goal by 100% and then some. Life Sucks, which had a much higher goal. Looks like a high school or middle school drama. 85,000 was their goal. They reached it. The Weatherman, which is coming soon, had a budget of 72,000. It's already up to 73,900. So they're making money, but I don't know if these shows kind of already have a following.
I'm looking now, too. One second.
That could be why it's not on there, because Will's asking for 500,000? Hoping for a million?
They're too high class, yeah.
That's what I'm wondering, and I don't know if this particular website is funding these on a episode-by-episode basis or like a season or series basis.
Here's a show, Cooking with Food. That looks like a good one, $500. Tying Shoelaces, an $800 goal on that show. That's a good one. Yeah, it might be that tabletop's too high class for this network, but then again, would it hurt them to distribute it through one more channel?
This is my point. Like, when I'm browsing TV shows on here, and I'm looking at all shows now, mind you, all shows. Now, this site produced their first show in 2012. There are a total of 11 shows on this network.
Seems like there's room for a real blockbuster.
Well, I'm saying this because, right, one, all of their shows are getting funded. So it's not like it's not working. It's obviously working. Every show that they're making is getting funded. But what doesn't seem to be the case is, like you said, they don't have a blockbuster. So why wouldn't they sign some kind of agreement to get some show like Will's on there to push the network a little further?
Yeah, I mean, you would think once it was funded, or maybe they could even throw a little something toward the campaign. Yeah, who knows? But it would seem like that would be a really nice, like, I'll say it again, blockbuster show to have on their network. Interesting.
Yeah, and I actually kind of want to ask our listeners to go on to mobcaster.com, M-O-B-C-A-S-T-E-R, and review some of these shows for us, because I know we don't have the time to watch all of these.
We're way too busy tabletop gaming and video gaming, as we have already discussed.
Yeah, we can't chunk it up like that. We're out of time.
Exactly. Well, I think we have veered into the third question I was going to ask, and we just sort of arrived at it accidentally, thankfully. I was going to ask how you guys feel about crowdsourcing a show like this, and even a proven show. You know, people take a dim view when it comes to crowdfunding a lot of projects, and I know some people have complained, you know, here we have an established show by this rich guy and this rich girl, and they should pay for it themselves and blah, blah, blah. But what are your feelings on this show or any show going out to the public saying, hey, if you like this, help us raise funds to do another season? I mean, it seems like you guys both have a favorable view of it, but I want it on record.
I do not, actually. This in particular gets a little bit more credit for me because under that Google program, I guess they never really had to worry about promotion and viability. But at some point, I just wonder, if you're on your third season and you're still not making any money, maybe you're not supposed to make a fourth season.
It's funny you went that route, because I was going to go the whole like free market route on it, and here's my point with it. And it's actually in the same direction, and this is why I don't have a problem with it, and why I actually kind of encourage it, is one, if you really love the show, you're going to want to pay for it. If you think the programming is worth it, you're going to pay for it. I mean, I pay for things that I don't think anyone would probably think are necessarily worth it, but they're worth it to me, so I pay for them. But the other aspect is that they get to feel like they're an actual part of the program. And I think that's kind of a cool feature for a lot of people, especially when they get their name in the credits somewhere or they get some kind of acknowledgement on a website. And third, I think now the ball completely goes back once this is funded into Will's court, because if he doesn't produce a quality program, who's going to pay in the future? It's now do or die for him.
Well, it's now do or die or go to Kickstarter for season 4.
I mean, there are always other outlets. Yeah, I'll give you that. But if the track record really starts to slip, I think, because I think the people who are watching on YouTube are the same people who are going to follow him to Indiegogo and make the investment. If he should get that investment and, let's say, fail and he moves to Kickstarter, I don't think they're following him a second time.
Now, you guys have both come to the next question that I wanted to ask. Regardless of whether you approve of it or not, assuming he raises the money, is this his new model going forward? Is he getting seed money to get this thing going, to develop revenue streams through advertising and affiliations and that kind of thing so that it's self-sustaining? Or is he adopting the NPR model of every year coming hat in hand and begging for new donations? Because no matter how loyal the audience is, I got to imagine that's going to get old pretty quick.
I'm curious because you said with NPR model coming every year asking for money, apparently the NPR year is a week long. Because every time I turn on NPR, they seem like they're begging for money and they're like, this is our 1 week. I'm like, I swear it was just this week again.
Yes, it does seem like they are very frequently asking for money. And that is a pretty massive outlet that has a taxpayer subsidy even, right?
Right. So
people are passionate about NPR and yet they still have to come begging for money every time. I would say that the audience for Tabletop is substantially less and possibly less passionate.
Probably. But if they're going to go the NPR model, the NPR model is different. It is essentially a crowdfunded model, but it's a guilt crowdfunded model. I actually invested it or donated to NPR this year for the first time, and it was purely out of guilt. I'm like, I've been listening to NPR for like 10 years, and for the most part, that thing they do where they're like, come on, buddy, you can do it. You know that like 10 cents you spend on your cup of coffee, you're going to spend it on this now. It worked. I kind of was like, yeah, I really should. It's been 10 years. And I did.
I am not passionate about NPR. I mean, I've heard of it and I've listened to it on a rare occasion. But maybe you guys will know this. What's their budget? How far could they get with $1 million?
I don't think they would get that far. I mean, their advertising budget is fairly non-existent. The only things they advertise are their own programs. I don't think they would get very far.
Well, that's an interesting point. Though we are, of course, talking about an anthill compared to a mountain when we're talking about the scale of Tabletop as compared with NPR, the model is still substantially different. Tabletop is not quote-unquote, above advertising or sponsorship. Now, they would, as I mentioned earlier, I think lose integrity if a certain game company was sponsoring them. But if they got just general sponsorship from sort of loosely affiliated products, like, and I got them to feed into all the usual gamer tropes, like Mountain Dew and, you know, Xbox, then I think you've got a model for a self-sustaining show where you may have to put up with ads, but at least they're not coming with a pledge drive and a guilt trip every year. That only worked on Eric like once in a decade, so you know that's not necessarily a dependable model.
I swear they're hiring like a horde of Jewish mothers to run their ad campaign, to run their fundraising campaign, I guess would be the what I was going for. But yeah, just that room full of Jewish mothers just nagging, and then there's a group of men promptly writing it down and being like, how can we hip this up a bit?
Hey, yo, you can donate some money maybe if it's not too much to ask? Like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice. Well, I will be immediately turned off if Jewish mothers notwithstanding, Tabletop goes that route. So I am hoping that this is a one-time good deal. I think the whole point of Indiegogo and Kickstarter and other crowdfunding platforms is to get a thing off the ground, to get it out of the gate. Until Facebook buys it. So, I mean, is it even within the rules of Indiegogo to come back season after season asking for funding?
I don't know if this was in the rules, but it certainly happens. I was at MegaCon when someone put on a, you know, I've done a successful Kickstarter, here's how you do it. And one of the questions was, how did you choose your budget? To which the answer was, well, I just threw a number out there, and when I needed more, I went to Kickstarter instead of Indiegogo.
Wow.
So people have at least basically kickstarted the same thing twice.
And people didn't mind. They gave the money. I mean, I guess if people are willing to give it, I thought there were like strict guidelines about how these things work, but increasingly that seems not to be the case.
Strict guidelines and we're going to turn down 10% of $1 million are very different things.
I have been very Kickstarter lucky because none of the projects that I have been an initial investor in ever fell through or asked for more money. Not one.
I almost think it's unsavvy users or something like that. Because I've backed like 20 projects, and the worst thing I can say is that they don't meet their deadline.
Yeah, that happened.
But like fell through, disappeared off the face of the earth, burned the books on a YouTube video, nothing like that.
No, not at all.
So any other thoughts on this topic?
Again, not to pick on poor Will, but since we're discussing it, I'll discuss it now. What else could be done with, in this case, the $1 million? These folks have so much money to... And it is a risk. There is no guarantee they will make this show. So they could possibly be throwing away their money. And in some other Kickstarters and Indiegogos, they indeed are. There's a lot of failed projects. But whatever happened to keeping libraries open longer, beautifying homes, beautifying neighborhoods, feeding the homeless, I just hope people are still doing that too. Because as much as I like having a program about my passions around, $1 million is a lot of money.
It is. You know, in his defense, though, Will Wheaton does a lot of charity events. And if he could tie the two together, which, by the way, he has done before. At Gen Con, for example, people could play Catan with Will Wheaton. They did an auction and a fundraiser for that. And, of course, he didn't keep a dollar, but he just played the game with people and raised a lot of money. So I don't think it's – I think if he can keep a name for himself and be a name, as he could use his celebrity for good, and that would be the return on it.
Well, again, not to pick on him personally, but I hope his supporters are doing that too. Some people are spending thousands of dollars on this project.
Right.
Yeah, I'll jump in and say, I mean, we don't know that maybe for every $1,000 they spend on this, they're not spending $10,000 to help orphans, you know, although I'm sure we can safely assume that's not the case. This goes back to an idea I think we might have touched on in the past in previous shows, or at least in our personal conversations, that I think that there should be maybe not a tax, but in the charter of every company that produces entertainment, a commitment to like, hey, you know what? If people can spend money on this, a certain percentage should go to help humanity. Like if we can all spend gazillions going to the next Star Wars launch, a certain percentage should like make it so nobody's starving. I'm in favor of like a, what do I want to call it, an entertainment tithe, if you will, for the betterment of humanity.
Look, I think Will Wheaton already gave his life for his friends and his country in the movie Toy Soldiers. So I'm not going to hold it against him.
I forgot he was in that.
Couldn't help myself.
Yes, yes. But your point is taken, Brian. Your point is taken, but at the same time, we do live in a very, what's the word I'm looking for, consumer-driven society where we all are guilty of spending substantial amounts of money supporting things that are not really essential to life and well-being, right?
Oh, was that not rhetorical?
Yes. I mean, how many children could you feed with the purchase of a tabletop game?
A good question. So what would you suggest then, Brian? So let's say you were structuring a project to fund a season of a show you had. Would you also throw in, oh, and by the way, a certain percentage is going to go to a charity, and make that just very blatant and obvious?
You know, I don't think it should be Will's responsibility. I don't think the company should necessarily have to do it. I just hope that people remember, I have all this money to give away. Maybe I can actually like do some good with it. And when it comes to the dollar amounts, this is, again, a huge dollar amount. I know some of his not direct competitors, but competitors have asked for like a tenth of this and been able to compete. So I always think maybe you can buy the $50 non-collector's item, non-special edition game, and then give the $20 that you would have upgraded to charity or something like that. Like,
yeah, as I'm looking over the rewards list on the Indiegogo site and contemplating exactly what you're saying, your point is taken again. This is just giving away money. And, right, if you've got $5,000 to I'm looking at the next to highest level to play games with them at the San Diego Comic-Con. It is, I guess, fair to ask what else could have been done with the 5,000. But I don't know.
And again, you're looking at the same model they used for a charity event last year, but this time that money is going towards producing his show.
Yeah, I am going to rationalize this by kind of siding with Eric on this one. Once this show becomes a self-sustaining juggernaut, it is going to be a vehicle for great good. There. That's my final rationalization.
I would like to point out, I think Eric meant this, I'm not entirely sure, but I would like to point out that Eric just said, so the thing that was going to charity is actually not going to charity anymore.
I did.
Because of this.
That's kind of why I was giggling.
Right, but then it's going to go even more to charity later. That's what I'm saying.
I will cross my fingers and hope on a falling star with you.
Charity's boring. Charity's not as fun as tabletop games, Brian. That's what you know. That's what you fail to realize.
It's not. It really isn't. Although I've worked on trying to build a house, and I say trying because, man, I'm not good at it. I don't know why they let laymen even try to build houses for people. It's just, you know, let us pay you some money and you do it because we're really bad at it. However, I will say this again for Will Wheaton, and I keep coming to his defense with weird things, but this one I mean. I have to believe that overall he's a good guy because I have actually in my classroom used some of the videos he has been in, recordings he has done where he has spoken out against bullying. I've actually used those things in my classroom and shared them with my students. I know there was one recently making the rounds with a little girl at a particular event, a con, asking him what to do about being called a nerd or a geek and being bullied. And his answer was absolutely fantastic. If you haven't seen it, maybe we can post the link or I'll recommend you Google it. But I shared that with my students. And although ultimately they're still kids and it's not going to bring it just a total end to bullying, I think it kind of sunk in for a few of them.
I've seen the link to that video, but haven't watched it yet. But there you go. The guy, at least in certain instances, his heart's in the right place. So does that make you feel any better about the now $456,260? $8 that have been raised for this cause, Brian?
Like I said, like I am confident Will is a good guy. I just hope that all the people giving that money are too, because
yeah, I'm not gonna hazard a guess. I'm sure they're all great. I'm sure for this $450,000 there's $18 million that have been given to orphans.
I don't want to name names, I don't want to name places, but when I play I don't hear a lot of, oh, I was volunteering over the weekend, oh, I was doing this. I hear a lot of, well, I just spent $5,000 getting my pretty figures hand-painted by a artisan in Shanghai. Good, dude, good. But, damn, couldn't you have had, like, you know, an artisan in China and then for $2,500 and, you know, fed a family of 10 for a year with the other $2,500 or something?
Brian, you do realize that we dedicate a fairly substantial part of our time that could be used to like helping Habitat for Humanities build a home to recording a show about our musings on geek culture, right?
And I do realize that each and every one of you has given money to charities and given time to charities and does something despite the fact that we're huge fucking dorks to better the world around us. Am I wrong?
I'm not laughing because I'm nodding and agreeing. And then I realized this is an audio recording and nodding is not helping anybody.
But we are, and we have not been shy about encouraging our fellow nerds and geeks to be socially involved in addition to being socially inept. But your point is taken, Brian, and the degree to which you are somewhat appalled by the substantial amount of money being raised for a show about tabletop gaming is noted.
And again, you know, dude, more power to you, Will. I'm happy, and I do think you're a great guy, but I hope your fans are equally as great a guy, because I do not see it when I play with some people. I see such just misanthropy, it's pathetic.
Those are not true Will Wheaton fans, sir.
They sure seem to like his game day, though.
If that makes you feel bad, though, I'm just going to point out, if people playing tabletop games and not giving to charity makes you feel bad. I want you to spend an hour on Xbox Live and know that these people are paying for these games, this console, and this service, and I want you to listen to how they use it. You'll feel better about the tabletop gamers.
So it could be worse.
Right.
Wow, so this conversation took a turn into the mildly depressing, and I'm ready to bring it to a fairly abrupt end, unless you guys have anything else to bring the room down with. No, that's it? Oh, great.
I think we're good.
Okay, well, with all that said, for all of our callous and completely self-absorbed listeners out there who have better things to do than help homeless people and save puppies, we encourage you to spend that time in a much more productive way by subscribing to and listening to the Nerdtravaganza podcast in iTunes or whatever pod-catching software you use. And if you haven't wasted enough otherwise productive time at that point, why not listen to us on the awesome streaming service known as Stitcher?
Don't forget to follow us to social media, like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, find us on Google+, and don't forget we have our amazing, fun, private Clubhouse group on Facebook.
No poor people allowed.
And when you get a break from saving drug-addicted orphaned panda babies, feel free to shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com or check out the website at nerdstravaganza.com.
And with all that said, keep gaming!